And I look to the east. I see the glow of that great city of Las Vegas. It lights the night sky, whether there are clouds to reflect it or not. It's an amazing, amazing city, and it's the one he chose to live in. Let me read just from the back of this book. It'll set up what we're about to do, I think. At the height, it's on the back of the book. I always read the back of the books. How about you? At the height of his wealth, power, and invisibility, the world's richest and most secretive man kept what amounted to a diary. The billionaire commanded his empire by correspondence, scrawling thousands of handwritten memos to unseen henchmen. It was the only time Howard Hughes risked writing down his orders, plans, thoughts, fears, desires. Hughes claimed the papers were so sensitive, quote, the very most confidential, almost sacred information as to my innermost activities, end quote, that not even his most trusted aides or executives were allowed to keep the messages he sent them. But in the early morning hours of June 5th of 1974, unknown burglars staged a daring break-in at Hughes' supposedly impregnable headquarters and escaped with all of the confidential files, despite a top-secret FBI investigation and a multi-million dollar CIA payback, buyback. They offered to buy it back. None of the stolen secret papers were ever found. That is until investigative reporter Michael Drosnin cracked the case. In Citizen Hughes, Drosnin reveals the true story of the great Hughes heist and of the real Howard Hughes. Based on nearly 10,000 never-before-published documents, more than 3,000 in Hughes' own handwriting, Citizen Hughes is far more than a biography or even an unwilling autobiography. It's a startling record of the secret of our times. Now, if you read that on the back of a book in the bookstore, you'd take that book home, wouldn't you? Well, we have the luxury of having the author right here. In a moment, we continue with Michael Drosnin. You know, it's going to be very hard to pepper Michael with questions about Howard Hughes. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to just sort of turn it over to him. But I do have one at the beginning. Michael, how could you get what the CIA couldn't with millions?
I'm better than they are. No, here's the truth. There was the appearance of a massive investigation when Howard Hughes' secrets were stolen from his headquarters. Every power center in the world was shaken because Hughes was involved with all of them, with the CIA itself, with the Pentagon, with the Mafia, with the White House. He bribed presidents. He bribed presidents with bundles of $100 bills. Howard Hughes was, in his latter years, like a villain in a James Bond movie. You never saw him, but he exerted enormous control from hiding. And when his secrets were stolen, the world shook. But it shook the CIA and the FBI so deeply that they never really investigated the case at all. They pretended to. I know this because I received, under the Freedom of Information Act, the files from the FBI and the CIA about their investigation, or their pretended investigation, of the burglary of Howard Hughes' headquarters. And here's what really happened. They decided not to investigate. They decided that Howard's secrets were too hot to handle. They decided that they did not want to find the evidence that Richard Nixon, still in the White House, had received $100,000 in secret cash from Howard Hughes.
I was going to press you for that, but there it is.
They decided that they did not want to find the truth about themselves, the CIA, the FBI, the Pentagon.
So
they were terrified of the mess they would be in if they actually tracked down the burglars and got hold of Howard Hughes' secrets, because then they would be legally obligated to prosecute the president. They would be legally obligated to prosecute themselves. So they decided in secret never to really look for the burglars at all. That is why I was able to do what they could not do, because I decided to actually look.
What?
Okay. Now, it took me 6 months, but I knew after 3 phone calls that something was terribly wrong, because I made the 3 calls I would have made the first day I went to work at the Washington Post when I was 20 years old. I called the 3 people anyone investigating that break-in would have had to call just to start looking into it. And those people had never been contacted by anyone.
That's what
got me going.
So do you name these people?
I could, but I won't.
All right.
Because my arrangement in the end, when I did track down the burglars, mm-hmm. was very simple. I told them I was going to write a book. It was either going to be a book about the break-in and about them, or it was going to be a book about Howard Hughes. But if it was going to be a book about Howard, then I needed those secret papers.
Right. Here's something I don't get, though, Michael. These giant powers that we just talked about, the presidency, the CIA, all the rest of them, how could they be comfortable not reaching out and touching those burglars, because they could not know the intent of the burglars with regard to the information they held? So how could they simply dismiss the investigation and rely on the good intentions of the burglars who now had information that could ruin their lives?
And the answer, I think, is that you don't understand how a government bureaucracy really works.
I guess
which
not.
Is to try to avoid at all costs taking the responsibility for dealing with a terrible can of worms. The CIA and the FBI at the highest levels made the decision.
Right.
That they didn't want to open the can of worms. Because if they opened it, they had to deal with it. They had no choice under law. Whereas if I opened it, they didn't have to deal with it, and they didn't.
And plus, they can deny it, of course. Deniability. Not easily.
No one ever denied one word in my book, Citizen News. No one.
How did you interact, and I suppose, did you interact with the burglars? You must have.
Yes. So,
how did that interaction take place?
I tracked down the man who had led the burglary team.
Uh-huh.
And as I told you, I gave him a very simple choice. It was either going to be a book about him and his cohorts, or a book about Howard Hughes. And
did they hold that over your head and say, look, we want to be the book?
Oh, no, the opposite of you understand. No. They had committed a crime. They not want it reported, obviously. They would go to jail.
Very much so.
They, however, did not instantly agree to do what I wanted, which was to write books. To give me the papers so that I could write a book about Howard. That took another 6 months after I found them.
Meetings,
to trust
I imagine meetings with them, telephone calls.
Me.
Yeah.
It's really what reporting is largely about.
You bet.
It helped that I had once gone to jail rather than reveal a confidential source.
That would help.
They knew they could trust me because I had shown myself trustworthy in a similar situation. But finally...
They gave in.
They did give in, or I wouldn't say they gave in. The chief burglar decided he liked me. I would say more than anything else, that was why.
What about jail, Michael? I mean, okay, fine. You went to jail once previously, not because you would not reveal sources, and I can see how that would help you in your negotiation with them, but writing this book could put you right back in...
No. First of all, when I was jailed for refusing to reveal confidential sources, what I did is write a story for the New York Times about the condition inside the jail, from inside the jail,
right,
that caused the federal judge to shut the jail down. this made me fairly immune to being jailed again. You know, how many jails do they want to lose?
Yeah.
The truth has a tremendous power. The press, when it plays its proper role, has a tremendous power.
Uh-huh.
And the authorities are very leery of going after the press when the press is not timid. It's only when the press is timid that the authorities go after it, as they do these days.
Totally. No question in your mind about the authenticity of what was given to you.
Oh, there's none at all. In fact, no one ever denied that the documents were real, and everyone who knew, who had any basis for knowing, confirmed it. The man who received most of the memos from Hughes, no friend of mine, by the way, confirmed it on national television, that these were authentic documents. He also confirmed that he had indeed given the bribes to the presidents, as I said he had.
By the way, what was he bribing the president for? Can you?
Howard Hughes told him to. Howard Hughes, I would not say was an actually evil man, because he did not seek to do others harm. He was terrified of the entire world outside. I know that's hard for people to believe, that the richest man in the world could also be the most frightened man in the world.
Did he have
cause?
But
that, in fact, was the case.
Well, you know, the big question is, did he have cause to be terrified? Or was it paranoia?
Howard Hughes was, quite literally, a naked madman. For the last 20 years of his life, he lived in hiding in one blacked-out hotel room after another, never wore any clothes, lived in filth, was a billionaire junkie. He was shooting up codeine. He was as mad as a hatter on one level. And on another level, completely lucid, extremely intelligent, a very good writer, by the way, which
yes,
is part of why the book works so well, because it is Howard telling his own story. And he had, from the time when he was young to the day he died, all during the period of his madness, an iron will. And because of his great wealth, he was able to impose that will on everyone, including presidents of the United States. But what he was seeking was not so much to promote his business interests or escape his taxes, although he didn't pay any for 17 consecutive years. I know that because I also have his income tax returns.
That's incredible.
What he was really seeking, above all, was to protect yourself. From what? The answer is from everyone and everything outside his blacked out room. But finally, his fears came to rest most of all on the nuclear tests the government was conducting in the Nevada desert, not far from his hideout in a penthouse of a Las Vegas casino on the Las Vegas Strip.
Yeah, well, then why would he be there?
Well, one might say, if you're going to hide out from the world,
yeah,
why the Las Vegas Strip? I mean, the most garish place in the universe, the most public place.
One is asking,
why there?
Yes, why?
And the only answer is,
what happens in Las Vegas stays.
He had been there before in his life when he was young and liked it. Now, you could say that doesn't make much sense because he never left his room. So it wouldn't matter where he was. He never looked outside the windows. He had them blacked out the moment he arrived.
You're telling me his greatest fear began to be the test they were conducting?
You got it.
Because let me tell you something, Michael. I've lived in Las Vegas many, many years. I worked for KDWN in Las Vegas, and I used to announce on the radio, stand by because it 10:47 this morning, there's going to be a nuclear test, and if you're on a high building or something, get off, you know, a precarious position, get off, because it's going to rock. And, baby, it rocked. I went through those tests.
That is what happened to Howard. Try to imagine this situation. Here is the richest man in the world. He has chosen as his hideout the penthouse suite of the Desert Inn Hotel on the Las Vegas Strip. And then he buys the hotel. He buys every surrounding hotel. And in order to feel safe, he buys the hotels surrounding the surrounding hotels until he owns all of Las Vegas, in effect.
Yeah.
He buys the governor. He buys the gaming commission. He buys the city councilman. He buys everything in order to feel safe.
Gaming commission?
And then, so he never had to appear publicly to get a license like everyone else had to, because he never appeared at all.
He bought the gaming commission?
He bought everybody. Now, and I mean lock, stock, and barrel. Now, there he is, thinking, finally, I am safe. And one day, his penthouse begins to sway.
That's right. That's absolutely
correct. And what is it? It is a nuclear test out in the Nevada desert. And Howard Hughes, at a time when no one understood how dangerous these tests really were, he was dead right. They were very dangerous. Saw the danger.
Did that drive him mad?
And it drove him even crazier.
And that would be something.
And what he did with his iron will and his vast wealth was unique in all of American history.
Was Howard Hughes, Michael, able to influence the United States government's testing policies?
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
First, he tried to bribe Lyndon Johnson to stop the bomb tests in Nevada.
Uh-huh.
Here's what how he put it to his aide. I want you to try to determine who is the real, honest-to-God bad man at the White House, and please don't be frightened away by the enormity of the thought. I have done this kind of business with the president before.
Oh my God.
So he wears no awe-inspiring robe of virtue with me.
Oh, my God.
I am sure that the president is waiting to hear from us on some kind of hard cash adult basis.
Oh, my God. Those are his words?
Oh, totally. I'm quoting. What's wonderful about Hughes is that he said openly what others do but pretend is some form of participation in politics, civics, patriotism. Howard was blunt and open about what he was doing. He was using money to get his way, to buy power, to buy what he wanted in the world. Here's what he had to say about the second man he approached on the subject, Richard Nixon. I am determined to elect a president of our choosing this year, and one who will be deeply indebted and who will recognize his indebtedness. If we select Nixon, then he, I know for sure, knows the facts of life. Johnson offered a $1 million bribe at his ranch in Texas by Hughes' right-hand man.
Yes.
Refused to sell Howard the bomb.
Made
it very clear.
Sell him the bomb.
Be happy to exempt him from his any antitrust laws.
What do you mean refused to sell him? You're telling me Howard Hughes wanted to.
No, he didn't want a bomb, literally, but that's how Johnson saw it.
As in telling
and
him
he was outraged by
stop the testing.
He was outraged by this. I can't use the language on radio or our current FCC, which is so difficult.
They are.
Will not allow me to quote a president of the United States and what his reaction was. Lyndon Johnson was as plainspoken as Howard Hughes.
Yes.
However, in Richard Nixon, Howard had found his perfect president.
Soulmate.
And what Nixon did, first he tried shuttle diplomacy. He offered to send Henry Kissinger to come to Las Vegas to meet with Howard to negotiate this issue.
Oh.
And Hughes reacted with rage.
You know, this sounds like science fiction.
Hughes reacted with rage because, as he put it to his henchmen, having Kissinger come here will only embarrass me. You know that I won't meet with him. Remember, Howard has seen no one now for, you know, something like a decade. And for the next decade, we'll see no one again, right? He will see no one until he dies. No outsider enters his room. He didn't want Kissinger. He wanted an end to the test. And he said, go back and offer Nixon the money. And Nixon took the money and moved the bomb tests to Alaska.
I don't remember that.
Move, the truth.
I don't remember that. Move the bomb test to Alaska. When did
Absolutely.
That... Well, they didn't actually conduct any in Alaska, though, did they?
Well, yes.
They did?
But then they ran into a problem because the Russians protested it was too close to where they were. No one, you see, this is the ultimate not-in-my-backyard issue.
Yeah.
But Howard had the cash. The Russians only had, their own nuclear arsenal. Well, Nixon went for the money.
God.
Now, this is the incredible power of the man.
Often
have wondered, how would these presidents have behaved if they had known, which they did not, no one knew, that they were dealing with a naked madman, someone with his hair down to his backside.
I'm not sure it would have mattered.
Beard down to his navel.
From what you've told me about money.
Never wore clothes.
Yeah, the money.
Stored his urine in mason jars in his bedroom closet.
I am
talking crazy.
Why did he?
Because he could not let go of anything that was his. We are talking about madness at a level you can't even begin to imagine.
As you read these in his own words,
I have the original papers.
You still have them?
I don't know if that's good. A certain number of them order to make sure they were fully authenticated by document experts.
When did
and
they
to
begin?
Do that, you can't work from a photograph or a Xerox.
When did they begin, Michael?
They begin in earnest when Howard arrives in Las Vegas in 1967.
And what was the state of his descent?
1966. Thanksgiving of 1966.
And at that point, what was the descent, state of his descent into madness?
Oh, it was total.
By then,
he'd already spent 10 years building himself up to this point.
So.
And in living in a bungalow, the Beverly Hills Hotel, and endlessly watching the same movies over and over. He saw one movie 100 times.
I heard that he started one of our channels in Las Vegas, bought a TV station.
Oh, but so you know, and you knew why, and apparently without reading my book, Howard bought the network, the station, in Las Vegas, and it was the local CBS affiliate, in order to put on the movies he wanted to watch at night.
That's now our Channel 8 here,
folks. Now, this is before VCRs. In order to program your own television station, you had to own it. Okay. Now, for Howard, that wasn't good enough because he kept changing his mind. And he would, like at 2 a.m.
Call him up.
No, he wouldn't call him up. He'd have the aide call him up and say, instead of great jewel robbery at 2 a.m., Mr. Hughes would like to see Hired Gun. He would do this every night, all night.
I bet it drove them out of their minds.
Out of their minds, clearly. And then finally, he said, I understand that some of the viewers, again, I'm quoting him exactly, have complained about the movies listed not being the ones shown.
Yes.
In order to resolve this problem, I suggest that we no longer list the names of the late night movies. This should make everybody happy. These exact words. Now,
wow.
This wasn't enough for him. He decided to buy an entire television network. He staged a hostile takeover bid and succeeded. He could have owned ABC. He had more than half the stock. And then one night, while he was in the midst of this takeover battle, which he had succeeded in, he saw on ABC a program called The Dating Game. I don't know if you recall this.
Of course I do.
But it's where a man had a pick between three women on scene, or a woman had to pick between three men on scene.
That's right.
In this case, it was a man who had to pick between three women on scene.
Yes.
And Howard thought that this man, who was black, had picked a white woman. And Howard was a crazed racist, not out of hate, but again out of fear. Blacks terrified him for the same reason germs did. There was no reason, in other words. And it was, in fact, not a white woman at all, but a light-skinned black. Howard didn't know this, but over the show, and his rage canceled the ABC deal.
Oh, my God.
Or else he would have owned an entire network.
That's madness. That is madness.
His goal in buying the network.
That's what I wanted to know.
Was purely, again, his viewing pleasure. You have to understand that his whole life,
you've got to be kidding,
was television.
So
he never looked outside. He never went outside.
But he would have proposed to program for the entire nation.
Well, he would have been programming for himself only, and the entire nation would have watched. Howard is what is called the solipsist. Someone who only truly believes in his own existence. This is who he was. He believed in other people in only one sense, as a threat to him. He had no concern for anyone else, but he had immense concern for himself.
Well, you know what, you read me so far.
He was so focused on his own being.
Yeah, you read me so far, Michael. You know, it may have been madness in intent from by our standards, but I mean, it was quite lucid, actually. So it was only a kind of madness, right?
Everything about him was like that. In his there was always a method in his madness. There was a lucidity.
Exactly.
Even at the extreme, even at the no matter how lunatic what he was doing was, he was doing it with incredible precision of a trained engineer.
Well, it sounded absolutely
iron will with this incredible craftiness, this absolute insight to the dark side of human nature. He knew exactly how to get his way. He always succeeded, always.
By the way, do we know, does anybody know, how much money Howard Hughes had?
Well, you have to, of course, think of it two ways, in the terms of then and the terms of now, because inflation changes all numbers rather rapidly.
Well, in today's dollars.
Howard Hughes became, in 1968, Fortune magazine declared him the first American billionaire. They said he had $1.3 billion. Now, later, when a small part of his empire was sold to General Motors, it was sold for $5 billion. So you can see that, of course, if you think of it, and that was like 10 years ago. So if you think of it now in today's terms,
yes.
Howard had, I'm not sure how we would even estimate the amount, because the value of all of Las Vegas, which he bought, also mm-hmm. ballooned incredibly.
Oh, yes.
The value of, he was the sole owner of a defense, of one of the top 10 defense contractors.
Mm-hmm.
He owned it completely. He owned a movie studio, an airline, and more land than anyone else in the country. He owned the patent on the drill that was needed to drill every oil well in the world.
Oh, my.
That was the source of his money.
That would do it.
His father invented the drill bit.
That would do
it. And that poured out. That was like a goose that laid the golden egg.
So Howard had some gold eggs when he arrived.
Absolutely. He's orphaned at the age of 18. His father dies. His mother had died 2 years earlier when he was 16. And at 18 years old, Howard is at once abandoned in the world, an orphan, and a multimillionaire.
Hmm.
He always could do exactly what he wanted to. And one of the few people who were allowed in his presence during that last 20-year period, one of six people, all of them Mormons, because Howard decided that only Mormons were pure enough, clean enough, to come into his presence.
My God.
So his staff of personal nursemaid attendants.
All Mormons.
Were all these Mormon men. And one of them, and I interviewed them before I wrote the book.
Oh.
And I got the first interviews with them as well as the secret papers. So I could get a picture of what it was like in that room. Oh. And what they told me just blew me away as much as what Howard had written.
How did they even
know? The Mormon commented to me, it isn't good for a man to be able to do anything he wants to.
Yep.
Very interesting. In a sense, people have asked me, what's the rosebud? Because they think of Citizen Kane.
Mm-hmm.
What's the secret of Howard Hughes? Why did he go crazy?
Is that the answer?
There is no one answer. You don't get that crazy for a single reason, okay? But to the extent you can give an answer, that is it. It isn't good for a man to be able to do anything he wants to.
A life without limitation at all.
Yeah, none ever.
Sort of a god in a way.
None, as close as one of us can get.
Could ever be, because you could manipulate everybody.
It is the ultimate money doesn't buy happiness story. Howard Hughes did not have a moment of happiness in those last 20 years of his life.
God, that's
they
sad.
They were years of increasing terror. And it was terror that mounted not day by day, but practically minute by minute.
And that came through in all of these writings?
It's incredible. And they are all in effort to deal with his terror by controlling the entire world outside his room.
Of course. A man who has everything becomes ultimately terrified and then tries to ultimately control, and incredibly, apparently, for the most part, succeeds.
Almost entirely.
Well,
there is no record of anyone turning down his money. Let me put it that way.
Did researching all of this in the end make you cynical? And if it didn't, how could it not about, I don't know, about human beings? If everybody
not about human beings.
Oh.
It made me certainly more cynical about the true nature of power in America. It made me, Howard in his own way revealed it by writing memos expressing himself so bluntly. Of course, he thought they'd remain forever secret, but who else would say, I want you to find the real honest-to-God bagman at the White House?
Huh.
I mean, no one else puts it that way, even if it's their goal. And I assure you, it is the goal of many wealthy.
It's as blunt as it gets.
You have to say that at this moment, our government is every bit as much for sale as it was back then, and indeed that our president is right now every bit as much bought as the presidents that Howard Hughes bought. But no one who gives money to George Bush would ever put in writing anything like, I'm determined to elect a president of our choosing this year, and one who will be deeply indebted and who will recognize his indebtedness. No one else would put it that way. No one would say, I think we need to deal with the president on a hard cash adult basis. Oh. Only Howard would put it that way.
It kills me even hearing that.
This is like the Nixon tapes, the Watergate tapes, from the other side of the ledger.
Exactly.